All right, talking about reality shows still, let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the air.
Jeremy?
Yes.
Tribe has spoken.
Oh, great. Oh, great. Another crazed Survivor fan. Who is this?
Jeremy? This is Jeff Probst. Oh. Not a crazed fan. I am your worst nightmare. God really has spoken.
It's the crazed Survivor host, ladies and gentlemen, and... Well, thanks for giving us a call, Jeff. Here's the thing. You're taking over primetime with Survivor, then daytime with your talk show, and now what? You're trying to move into radio then? Nicely done.
We definitely haven't taken over daytime. We're struggling to hang in there, but it's been a fun experiment so far.
Well, let's talk about that, because, I mean, there's got to be a lot of pressure you're going up against. Ricky, I mean, she had a show for a decade, and then Katie Couric, I mean, a legendary, you know, newswoman. And then you sort of retooled your show when you were launching, right?
Well, we'll probably continue to retool it until we find something that really satisfies both us and the audience. So I know it may sound disingenuous, but I didn't feel any pressure. We're just trying a new show, and I'm working hard on it, and I definitely want it to succeed because I have a lot invested, and my ego's in there, and people's livelihood, but it's not the pressure of Katie or Ricky or Steve Harvey. It's just our own pressure to try to figure out, is there a show that we can do that we like that can find enough of an audience to make it financially viable? Because daytime is such a small audience right now.
And so, I mean, I guess every time somebody's launching a show, they're wanting to do something different that hasn't been done before. I mean, when you guys started planning it, and even now, as you're saying, you know, you're still retooling as you go. Here's the thing. There's that female audience, and then, you know, back in the day, it was Donahue, obviously, you know, legendary. Is it harder for a guy to make it in daytime? Obviously, you know, Anderson just got canceled as well.
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know if it really is about that as much as the truth about the industry right now, which is with people DVRing and people leaving the way they've been watching television for so many years, it's a transition. And with the transition is coming confusion. And I mean, I'm not an expert. I'm just, you know, on the outside. But it appears that we're right in the midst of a major transition of how is this going to work, where people don't really watch TV at 8 o'clock at night when Survivor's on. They watch Survivor after the kids go to bed, or the kids get to watch it after they finish their homework. But my point being, you don't have to watch it at 8. You can watch it Saturday morning if that's your reward. Mm-hmm. So that's what's happening, I think, in daytime, is that for a long time it was very profitable, and now it's very streamlined. And I think Anderson's proven he's a very good host. It's not that he's not a good host. It's just there's only so many eyeballs out there, and who's going to get them? And what Oprah did, I feel fairly confident saying will never happen again.
But, I mean, let's admit, come on, you're happy that Anderson got canceled. Let's be honest. Let me just read.
Actually, I know Anderson only because we used to, we would pass each other when I would be in New York or filling in for Larry King. We might talk on the CNN connection, but I don't have his phone number, and I wanted to call him because I really want to just say, okay, dude, truthfully, tell me, are we having the same experience here? Because it's a far cry from Survivor, where we launched that show in the summer. It was paid for through sponsor, you know, through Mark went out and sold the show beforehand, and so the network left us alone. And when the show launched and it was a hit, they continued to leave us alone. And to their credit, CBS has been the best partner, because we've all sort of just let the show evolve and nobody stepped up and said, let's change it. But when you're launching a new show, typically there are a lot of opinions. And that's the truth about daytime, is you just have a lot of people with opinions. And the more opinions you get, you know, on one side you have all this knowledge coming in, on the other you start to lose your voice. You know, you can end up lost trying to figure out who the hell you are. And I'm trying to make sure that doesn't happen to me, that regardless whether the show works or not, and whether we're renewed or canceled or on forever, that I'm doing a show that I'm into.
And typically, though, as I said, daytime is a female audience. And do you have to, and I'm going to say it, Jeff, are you getting in touch with your feminine side for this show?
Well, I've always been in touch with it.
Okay, good.
Aside, it's one of the things that I'm kind of known for in my circle of friends, is I'm very emotionally aware, and I live in that world. That's what turns me on more than football, is what are you doing with your life and what do you want from your life? And so that part's not a big deal. I don't have any issue sharing. My wife's on the show. Mm. I put a camera in her office. That's really not it. I feel like the MacGuffin is, what is your show about? It's really, you just got to you got to tap into something that people want to watch. But the trick is you have to do something that you also enjoy doing. Otherwise, it won't work. Mm-hmm. You can't. It's like the creator of Everybody Loves Raymond said, do the show you want to do because it's going to get canceled anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, sooner or later, it will get canceled, either one week in or a year in or a decade later. So do what you want to do. And that's the trick. It's hard because you have a financial responsibility. CBS gave me money to make a talk show. I have a financial responsibility to that bank called CBS to deliver a profit. And if I don't, they should fire me and cancel me. That's how it goes.
All right, we're going to have more with Jeff Probst, our surprise guest, coming up in just a little bit. And we're going to talk about that content on his show, The Jeff Probst Show. More right after this.
Today's best music with Jeremy Bradley.
Jeremy Bradley here, back chatting with Jeff Probst, host of Daytime's, well, The Jeff Probst Show. Conveniently, they have the same name. So in terms of content on the show, I mean, you've had, the Guys on the Couch, you've got your ambush adventures. Interesting thing about The Guys on the Couch, have you ever had a question let's use the word naughty, that it didn't make it to air?
Yes.
Okay, what was it? We can talk about it here.
God, I'd have to think, but you can't say penis. You can say it maybe once.
Right.
But you can't do anything, from what I understand, you can't do anything that conjures up an image. That's pretty hard for me to do. I'm a colorful speaker, and I like images, and I'm baffled by the fact that Taken 2, the movie, had something like 57 murders in it. A mother was cut, her throat was cut, she had a hood over her head, she was hung upside down to let the blood drip out while her husband, Liam Neeson, is chained to a wall watching, and their daughter is being chased by the other bad guys, gets a PG-13 rating. But you can't talk about anything regarding sex on television. It's, It is so ass backwards that I don't even know what to do with it. I don't know if I should just stop and become somebody that fights for freedom of speech, and I don't know. It's just nuts to me. We did a show on transgender youth that has not aired. One of the shows I'm most proud of, because we're tackling a topic that hopefully in 10 or 20 years, people will look back and go, they used to do talk shows about that? Oh, it seems so silly. It's such a normal thing. But right now, it's not. It's a big deal. And we had a teenager who transitioned from a girl to a boy and was inspired by watching Oprah 5 years ago, in which a girl transitioned to a boy and told his story on Oprah. Well, we had the kid who told his story on Oprah, and then we had the boy who transitioned. We're talking about sexual reassignment. We're talking about kids coming out of the body and saying, Mom, Dad, something's wrong, and I don't know what it is, but I'm a boy. But when it came time to talk about the actual sexual reassignment surgery that adults go through, we could use an onion to represent the vagina, but we couldn't use a similar vegetable like a cucumber or a banana to represent the penis because that was too sexual. We could, however, use an empty roll of toilet paper. So let your mind go there. You can use the smelliest vegetable to represent a vagina, and you can use the thing that you use when you go to the bathroom to represent a penis. But you can't use a cucumber because that would be too sexual. I mean, none of it makes sense.
Now, do you think, because back in the day, All in the Family wasn't necessarily censored. I mean, there was a bit of a warning, I guess, for a little while on the show. And now, when it re-airs, in syndication or whatever, I mean, it's kind of funny to see, we've sort of taken a step backward as society in terms of our tolerance for things.
Yeah, it seems like it. I really don't. I'm not an expert on it, and I'm getting educated on it. And I'm not mad at anybody. I'm just baffled. I'm baffled that we teach kids sexual education. Mm-hmm. But don't put anything on the air in the afternoon because they might see it. You're kidding.
So
really? Even the word naughty. You started this by saying anything a little naughty.
Right.
I was told when one of my early meetings, ooh, naughty is a tough word to use because it implies sex.
Right.
And I said, take the over-under on when I use naughty within the first week. I mean, that's that's just nuts that you can't say naughty.
Oh, the things you learn. So, you know, we've got to get back to the music, so hold on to your onions and your toilet paper rolls. We're going to be right back with Jeff Probst right after this.
Today's best music with Jeremy Bradley.
Jeremy Bradley back here on Top of the Charts and the Open Road. Jeff Probst, daytime talk show host. Check your local listings. He's joining us still on the line now. In the last segment, we were talking about how touchy a daytime audience can be, or at least the rules for a daytime audience can be. And you've had lots of interesting content on your show. Do you have a dream guest, and what would you ask them?
You know, I don't have a person in particular. It's interesting that what I would ask them is anything I'm interested in about them, because from Survivor, I've really learned that the questions that are on my mind are on other people's minds. Because that's probably the most common comment that I get is, you ask the questions I wanted to ask. I'm no genius. I'm just listening, going, what do you mean you're not helping with the fire? That sounds like a risky move on a show called Survivor. Are you certain you're safe, or are you just out of touch? It's just asking those questions. And my mentor is Howard Stern, who will ask anything, and people who aren't fans can't understand how you could be a fan, and people who are fans say to those who aren't, you need to listen again, because he had Lady Gaga on last year, and it was one of the greatest interviews I've ever heard of anybody at any time. I learned so much. And then she did a performance of Standing on the Edge of Glory, and she talked about it was when she was with her granddad and he was dying, and it was one of the most moving things. So I don't care who's on the show. I ask the questions I'd want to know. I'm not really interested in what character you play on TV. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I care about, do you remember that moment? Do you remember where you were standing when you got that phone call? Were you scared? Were you not? Or do you think you're more entitled now? Have you changed? Do you expect things? Did we treat you okay? Do you get annoyed? What's it like to be a good-looking guy in Hollywood in your 30s and single? How often do you... All those things that anybody wants to know. Mm-hmm. About the only question I don't ask, because I've just been told so many times it's rude, is I avoid the money question, even though I think it's a fair question. I respect the fact that enough people have said it's rude that I just won't ask it. Otherwise, yeah. I love interviewing, but we can't get the kind of guests, you know, we can't get a Lady Gaga. We can't. We're a new show with low ratings. So we get my friends.
Yeah.
No, that's who we get.
And, Jeff, you know, we're out of time, actually. We didn't even get a chance to talk about Survivor. So you know what? Join us again next week. We're going to have more with Jeff Probst right after this. But back to the music right now for our listeners on Top of the Charts and the Open Road.
Today's best music with Jeremy Bradley.
Talk show host, Survivor host, the man who does it all. If you tuned in earlier, he voted me off my own show. Jeff Probst is still on the line. All right, you know...
But you know what? You're redeeming yourself.
Okay, good.
And this is Redemption Island season, so you actually could win yourself back in this hosting role.
There's an idol somewhere in my office, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay,
exactly.
I'll be looking for it. Now, Jeff, we were talking in the last segment about the new daytime talk show, and we've got, of course, questions about Survivor. I'm sure you're asked them all the time.
Yeah.
So if you have a few seconds for some of those.
Go for it.
All right. Now, I'll admit, I thought that Lisa, and I know she was just on your show, right? I thought that she would be gone first episode, maybe second. Has she surprised you?
Yeah. I have to say, I did not anticipate her being gone early, but like you, I thought it was possible. And in the beginning, when she and I were first talking, I said, if you last, you're going to be an inspiration, because your struggle is a common one. You're a mom. You're Christian. You're struggling in your life. We knew at that point that she was going through some marriage difficulties. And this is not an uncommon story, but what is uncommon is you've chosen to play this devilish game, Survivor, in which the motto is outwit. That's part of it. That means use your wits, and that might mean lying. And true to form, she's lasted long enough that women are now going, wow, look at this woman. She's being so vulnerable. And this mom who wants to put on a good display of Christianity is now in a game that you have have to lie, and it's okay. It's in the rules. You can lie. And she still struggles with it. So I'm so glad she's lasted.
Okay, so you've done the show for so many seasons, and I know you probably watch people's, you know, audition videos, and you read over the notes about them. So you must be a pretty good judge of character now when it comes to contestants. So is there a personality trait or physical ability? Like, what should people know about being on the show? Like, what makes a good contestant on Survivor?
I think it's a few things. Self-awareness is right up there. If you aren't aware of how you're perceived, it's going to be difficult because perception is reality. And especially when the only reality is the other 15 people that you're playing with, then the only thing that matters is how they perceive you. Nobody knows your grandmother and that you go visit her every Sunday or that you're really nice at church. No one cares. They just want to see how you're perceived. So if you don't realize that people don't trust you, you're dead. And if you don't realize that people see you as lazy and you need to pick it up, you're dead. So I think self-awareness is a big one. And I think for some people, patience, meaning count to 10. It feels so good right now to say, kiss my ass, but don't. Say count to 10, walk around the palm tree and come back and hopefully somebody else has said it for you. And now they're in the hot spot. Because a lot of Survivor is staying out of the way of the bullets and letting your ego go to bed. Just give it a rest. You know you're brilliant. Nobody else needs to know right now. Be aware of how you're coming across. Let other people make the big decisions. Let them know you're with them. But be looking for that moment. And when you see that moment, you have to go for it.
Now, I have to ask you, though, because people come in with this big game plan where they're going to have a fictitious story about themselves, and then they open up, you know, they hit it off with somebody within the first 5 minutes, and all of a sudden spill the beans and, you know, create an alliance. Is that a stupid thing to do? Because you still don't really know people at that point. Like, how...
I don't think you can judge it, because everyone does it. So, in the beginning, I used to look at people and say, the same thing you did. You'd say, why are you doing that? Haven't you learned from the earlier seasons? But at a certain point, I realized if people continue to do it year after year, then it's proof to me that it's in our nature. And I think when it comes to confiding in somebody, it probably comes from such a strong desire to trust. You're looking for someone you can rely on. And if you think you find it, you want to give them a token. You want to give them something to say, I'm going to tell you something. You want that bond. And if the reveal is something about how magnificent you are, that's your ego. Like whenever we have rich guys or doctors, they always say, well, I'm not going to tell anybody. And I always say, you won't be able to help yourself. You're so enamored with yourself that you won't be able to not tell them you're a plastic surgeon. That's your identity. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, day two, I wasn't going to tell you guys this, but I'm a plastic surgeon, board certified, number one in New York State, worth $50 million. I just want to let everybody, well, why? No one cared until now, and now you're done.
Yeah.
So that's that whole ego thing. Shut up. Don't. Malcolm's playing a great game of not giving anything up, and people are giving him information, but he's not giving up information. He's smart enough. He's a really smart dude, but what I love about him is he bites his tongue. He doesn't tell you stuff he could tell you, but he lets you tell him whatever you want.
Today's best music with Jeremy Bradley.
Apparently we're out of time. We're going to have more with Jeff Probst right after this. The Survivor finale is right around the corner. We are still joined by Jeff Probst, host of one of the longest running reality shows ever. After 20 some seasons, dumbest move ever.
There have been a few.
Who was it that got voted out with two idols?
James.
Yeah. Does that rank up there then?
No, I don't think that was really one of the dumbest moves. We gave him a hard time, but he played the odds. And he thought, I'm safe. And if I survive this, I'll be safe down to, I think, like final five. He played the odds. It's so easy to backseat drive. But giving up your idol when you have it and giving it to somebody else when there's only a few people left in the game, which quite a few people have surprisingly done, is always a risky move. But again, going back to what I said a minute ago, if you're there for fifth place, that's where you'll end up. And fifth place doesn't pay much. Mm-hmm. First place, however, pays $1 million. And even after taxes, it's still many, many hundreds of thousands of dollars. So if you're playing to win, you're going to make moves that people can sit at home and go, you idiot. But they weren't there. You know, it made sense at the time. So I don't know. I think most of the dumb moves just come from either you're just dumb. I mean, when people say, oh, but this challenge favors tall people, or, you know, Kerhoff or our challenge guy will always say, yeah, and puzzles favor smart people or work against dumb people. I mean, everybody's got their qualities. So I think giving up idols are probably the dumbest move. But, man, when you're not eating, you're really not eating. Mm-hmm. Just lose your mind. You can't concentrate anymore. You don't know what you're doing or saying.
Well, let's talk about then when they're not eating, what are you doing? Because I know, like, your counterpart, Phil Kogan from The Amazing Race, we love having him on the show, and he said that people always think that he's just flying from place to place. So what are you doing then while the tribes are living on the island? Like, what's your regular day then when you're not with them?
Yeah, it depends. We're often rehearsing or blocking or testing other elements of the show, whether it's challenges or figuring out how we're going to do a switch or where we're going to do the merge, because I'm the executive producer as well, or one of them, and the daily showrunner. So most of our day is spent prepping for what's going to come later, and then a small portion of my day is spent doing on-camera stuff. And now on the beach where the survivors live, our producers are out there with them all day. That's the main job during the day is a couple of teams, the camera teams, and our producers are out there just observing and taking notes. That's all they do all day is they observe and take notes. And they're directing their cameras where they think the best story is or who to follow. But they're really just following what's happening. You know, our schedule is non-existent. You're on 24/7. Even though you may have a call sheet that says, okay, we're going to rehearse this challenge at this point, we're going to have a team meeting at this point, somebody could, you know, need medical attention at 4 a.m. And so the radio is always on. It's always by your bed. There's always a cell phone of some sort, even though it's a local, you know, it's coming off our own satellite, so it doesn't always work. But there's always communication because it happens. It'll happen many times a year where there's somebody that might need to be evacuated or there might be a problem at camp, and you're out there for 39 days, living, breathing survivor. And if you have an afternoon off and you're in a place where you can scuba dive, go scuba dive. But you still have the radio with you. And it's that way for our whole crew. Get your job done, and when your job's done, knock yourself out. Do whatever you want. Read, surf, sit on the beach, and then be back at work. And it's why that world is so appealing, because there's no clocking in or clocking out. And as a result of that autonomy, everybody does their job to the highest degree, and they also party to the highest degree. They do surf, and they love to surf, or they will do photography, or they will scuba dive. But, boy, the next morning they're back in the art department cranking out some beautiful piece of art.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask, too, then. I mean, because you have some amazing, you know, whether it's a set or the different challenges and obstacle courses, how do you guys get everything over to where you're going if you're in such remote places?
Yeah, it's a big deal. You got to ship the timber in from the nearest, you know, port. Like, I think we got everything from Manila in the Philippines. And that's a big deal. Getting our food is a big deal. It comes in on big crates, or, you know, we'll get big shipments, and it'll be a huge, you know, it'll be a huge container that will come with food for weeks. And so it is a bit like living on a military base. So when you eat food, it's in a big mess hall, and they're in these big platters, and one person goes in after another, and you just follow in line, and you grab the big ladle, and you stick it in, and you grab some spaghetti. Or it's not like on a movie where you go up to a little craft services truck and say, hey, I'd love an omelet with a little tomato and oregano and some French toast. No, it's today we're serving pancakes and cereal, and there's some eggs if they're still there.
So you're confirming that no 5-star accommodations when you're on location?
No, we have never had a 5-star accommodation, ever. The nicest we had was in Nicaragua, and I will say that was pretty sweet. I had a cool house overlooking the bay, and most of our crew was in a really cool hotel. Not 5-star, but for Survivor, incredible.
Today's best music with Jeremy Bradley.
Jeremy Bradley here, still joined by Jeff Probst, host of Survivor, getting a behind-the-scenes look, an inside glimpse at the production of the hit CBS reality show. And now, we also see a lot of wildlife. I don't know if it's B-roll or if you guys are actually shooting it when you're out there, but there's that element of wildlife. So how does everybody stay safe, right? We see these night vision video of, you know, rats running around or whatever. I mean, how do you ensure everybody's safety?
There's two sides to it. The rats and monkeys and things like that, they're on their own, and they do come into camp, and they will, if you leave food out, they will eat it and destroy your camp because you're in their world. You have no idea where they are. They're just sitting there watching. But the snakes and things like that, I mean, for the most part, those animals leave when you're around. But we do have a wildlife expert guy. Carl is usually out there, and he goes to the camps, and he goes to the challenge locations, and like if we're rehearsing a challenge, he will be there 2 hours before we get there, walking through. In the Philippines, he'd be walking through the rice fields looking for snakes, and he finds them. It's amazing how many times he finds a snake. You think, there aren't any out there, and he'll say, there are lots out there. I found these three, and he'll have them in some sort of container, and he takes them somewhere else and releases them. He loves his job with these animals that he loves, and he cares for them so much. But then once a season, some crew member will defy the rule that says you have to wear closed-toed shoes, and they'll be in flip-flops, and they'll get bitten. And then we'll wrap them from foot to waist and put them in the chopper and send them to Manila to see if it's poisonous and hope that it isn't. It's a real deal. We're just very conscious of it, and we don't want any problems, so we take very few risks. And we always have an evacuation plan. We have an evacuation plan for anything that would happen involving a typhoon or a tsunami. We have an evacuation plan for volcanoes, if that's the need. And we always have an evacuation plan for an individual who's injured with our chopper team and our medical team. And it's pretty good. If you're going to get hurt, you're in good hands, because you'll be on a chopper and less than half an hour, no matter where you are. You'll be flown directly to the nearest hospital where they are waiting. We have a deal with them, and you drop and go, and you're in good care.
When contestants are hunting, I mean, are there different rules in different countries about what you can hunt and what you can't? Like, how do they know what they should eat and that's not going to poison them? Are they briefed on that before they get out there?
Yeah, we do. Before the show, we put them through a little survivor training school, which is usually a half a day to a day, and basically we give them this little booklet we put together, and it says these are berries that are okay to eat, and these are berries that are not, and these are trees that if you rub up against them, they'll make your skin burn, and these are trees that make a good fire starter. What's amazing to me is when I check in with the producers, how the majority of people don't even look at them. They're like, yeah, I got it. I know brown nuts are good, and the red nuts are bad. I got it. Thanks, man. And then they get out there and, somebody eats a nut and they're sick for 2 days. And you go, God, guys, I know you're Americans and you think you know everything, but that's why we gave you that book.
Yeah.
We don't want you to get, sick. I mean, we do, kind of, but not by eating a bad berry.
And this season you've got some of the guys from the past. Scariest moment ever that you've had on this show?
Oh, that's easy. The scariest moment for me was we had a guy, he was on this season, Russell, a black guy with dreadlocks, and he was on a few years ago, and he got really dehydrated, truly dehydrated, like what is medically called dehydration, where his body started to shut down. He passed out, and we brought him to, and we hadn't pulled him from the game yet because we thought he might be able to come back, and he was sitting there, and he was having a very hard time telling us where he was, how many numbers we were, what his birthday, those kind of things. But he was still, we don't pull anyone until it's absolutely necessary. And then, so we set him back up, and we're going to take his blood pressure, and his eyes rolled in the back of his head, and he was done. And they had a heart monitor on him, and it dropped from like, I can't remember now, but I think it was 80 beats to 60 beats. It was an extraordinary drop, fast. And the doctor looked at me as if to say, he's done, and I looked back as if to say, yep, I'm right there with you, and they gave him a shot of something and brought him back. But in those 2 or 3 seconds, a lot went through my head, including, okay, how are we going to deal with our first death on Survivor?
Well, that's well, I hate to end the segment on such a down note, but we've got to get back to the music. We're going to have more with Survivor host Jeff Probst coming up right after this here on Top of the Charts and the Open Road. And special thanks to our listeners tuned in on SpeakFreeCelebWatch.com.
Today's best music with Jeremy Bradley.
Jeremy Bradley here on Top of the Charts and the Open Road, still talking with Jeff Probst, host of Survivor on CBS. Now, every season, it's always some tropical destination. It's hot, it's sweaty, there's beaches. Why is Survivor never shot during the winter or in, like, a northern destination? What's the reason for that?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. There is that idea of people with very little clothing, not because of the sexy part of it, just because of the vulnerability. When you see a guy that all he has on is a pair of shorts or underwear and he's trying to build a shelter in the pouring rain, there's something very, it brings it down to a base level of like, look at that, man, they have nothing. So there's that. The other side of the coin is the cold weather is hard for us to shoot in. Some of the gear, you know, would have a hard time, and humans tend to congregate, so they're probably going to be, you know, in an igloo, mm-hmm. sitting in there trying to keep warm, and it doesn't lend itself to great moments, because one of the things that Survivor counts on is that somebody's going to climb a tree and somebody's going to fish with a Hawaiian sling while somebody else is going to be lounging in the sun. So that weather also helps foster the story.
What was the best or your most favorite Survivor moment ever?
Man, almost impossible, really, to answer. Because there's just been so many great moments. I have favorite moments every season. And if you have to pick one favorite moment, I would pick the very first season, and it wouldn't be when Richard Hatch won. It would be 2 days before, when there was a final challenge and there was three people left, and it was this woman, Kelly, and Richard Hatch, who won, and this guy, Rudy, who was a 72-year-old Navy SEAL. And it was the last challenge, and it was our first season, and we're in the middle of the sun, and it was beating down, and they had mud on their face. They had just walked over fire, I think. And all Rudy had to do was hang on to this idol longer than anyone else, and he would win. Everybody loved Rudy. And we all knew he was going to win. It was done. Our first season was done. It was in the bag because he's a Navy SEAL. Who's going to outlast a Navy SEAL? Nobody. Right. And in one little moment, while I'm talking to Rudy, he scratches his head like he can't remember the answer to a question, and it was over. And in that moment, I thought, oh my God, our show's gonna tank. we just lost our star. And then, you know, Richard Hatch wins and becomes one of the single most notorious reality show contestants of all time, and turned out to be fantastic because he was a villain. And it was great. We never even considered how good that could be for the show, and it turned out to be fantastic. And Rudy's a great guy, and we still love Rudy, but Richard was clearly a winner that we never saw coming.
And so, I mean, that must be a huge deal for you to be involved in, you know, the longest run. Is it the longest running reality show ever?
I think, yeah. I mean, we were the first, unless you include, with respect, things like Real World, you know, and
right.
or Cops, probably.
Right.
Yes, in terms of, like, competition reality, if you get rid of the arguments, yes, we were the first and sort of set the way for many of the, you know, for all the shows that came. And, yeah, I was in the right place at the right time. I mean, luck is such a big part of everything, and I just got lucky. I got lucky that I was smart enough to say no to a lot of jobs that came before Survivor. Just weren't tickling my fancy, and I just waited. And then I was really lucky that I connected with Mark and that he saw something in me and said, I'm going to give you the job. Now, he could have given it to a lot of people. Probably mm-hmm. still be on the air, and who knows what I'd be doing, but he gave it to me.
Well, Jeff Probst originally called in to talk about his daytime talk show, and then we ended up having a bit of a Survivor chat.
Thanks for having me on.
No problem. And then Survivor Wednesdays, 8, 7 Central on CBS. Jeff, thanks for voting me off my own show. Great chatting with you today.
Good chatting with you.
Jeff Probst, ladies and gentlemen, we've got to get back to the music. Oh, he just said I'm back on my show. You guys didn't hear that. He said it in my ear. We're back with more music right now on Top of the Charts and the Open Road.
Today's best music with Jeremy Bradley.